The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
What do you get when you combine a former congressman, an attorney, and someone who served in the military and mix them into one, along with a peppering of some Southern wisdom? You get Doug Collins, and he's a lot of fun, and he is next.
Welcome to the Michelle Tafoya Podcast.
Doug Collins, welcome back. Great to see you.
It's always good to see you. Hope you're well.
I'm great. You know, sat around Super Tuesday thinking, I know all the news outlets were ready to cover their big night. And it was a yawn. I mean, you know, right? I think one of the most interesting things to me, Doug, was particularly here where I live in Minnesota, but in other states as well, how many people voted unaffiliated or non-committed or whatever from the Democrat side? 20% here in Minnesota. On the Democrat side voted, you know, non-committed or whatever that term, it varies from state to state. What did you make of that?
Oh, well, I try to make not much of it, then try to put it in perspective. The Democrats have nothing else to do right now. Let's just face it. They've got Biden. They've got no second choice. There's really nothing there. Marianne Williamson, you know, the other guys. I mean, they're just not there. So what they're doing at this point is they're saying, Joe Biden, we're mad at you. We don't like that you've not been far left enough. We don't like that you've not just held Israel to account and, you know, tried to have a ceasefire there. You've not done everything you can. And so since they have nothing else to really do, they're going to say, well, we're going to show you, we're going to vote uncommitted so that you'll listen to us and try to push him to the left in this general election. So far, the Biden administration has done exactly what you would expect, and that is basically ignore it. Because at the end of the day, I will guarantee you that 20% in Minnesota, the other percentage in Michigan, when they had a real higher percentage of this, come November, the question not for the Biden campaign is all will that 20% vote for Donald Trump. The question will be is if they can keep only 1 or 2% of them from not showing back up. So in other words, all the rest of them are going to show back up and march step and vote for Joe Biden. What they're hoping for, the Biden campaign will do till November, is to ensure that the number is lower and lower and lower about those who are fed up, who just won't come out to vote.
So turnout is going to be key.
Yes.
Another interesting little sidebar that I noted was how many people in Colorado voted for Donald Trump after that Supreme Court there in that state tried to get him off the ballot. It was almost as though all of these people were saying, you can't stop us no matter what. I mean, there was a good number for Nikki Haley as well, but the sheer number for Trump sort of seems symbolic to me. What about you?
Yeah, it does. Look, I think the interesting thing here for Trump and Haley both is we've seen an increase in Republican turnout. We saw this in Donald Trump in Michigan alone outnumbered all of the other Democrats, Biden plus uncommitted and everything in Michigan together. Right. Now, the question is, and Michelle, just looking behind the scenes here, is that simply because nothing is going on the Democratic side? I think that's a big play here because there's just, you know, there's no motivation here. Colorado, it would be a surprise for Colorado to come into play, although it could. I think you saw better modeling if you looked at Texas, Virginia, some of the others who had North Carolina, who had actual primaries on both sides under ticket. And I think that was the most underreported, in my opinion, thing of last night. The breathless interpretations of the presidential campaign by the mainstream media about the presidential. And frankly, they missed a lot of pretty good stories in the undercard.
So what of the undercard caught your attention?
Some interesting races. One, let's go to Texas, where Texas has had a big, what I'll call family food fight in Texas, the GOP has. You've had with Governor Abbott, you've had with Attorney General Paxton, that impeachment stuff, Lieutenant Governor Patrick. I mean, there's a fight for that, the conservative side. Some will say conservative, moderate, however you want to. But state House races last night, including the Speaker of the House in Texas, many of those incumbents got forced to runoffs. One in particular, and think about this, a Speaker of the House getting forced into a runoff in Texas in a Republican primary. That's pretty impressive. Two of the districts around Dallas had million-dollar spends in Texas. And this is a House district, House District 36 and 53. And then there was another one that I happen to know, a lady down there, Helen Kerwin, who actually she ran against a longtime incumbent and actually came in first just under the threshold to beat a runoff. So incumbents had a hard time in Texas last night, especially those who did not vote for school choice, that did not vote, got caught up in the issue with impeachment on Paxton. So that was interesting to me. Also, some of the other interesting parts were like Mark Walker, who's a former congressman in North Carolina, was second place in a primary. So he's going to be in a runoff to try and get back to a seat that he once held. Sort of interesting to me that he ended up in second in a district that really resembled the district he served in for almost 8 years. So these are the kind of things that you look at going on. Of course, Mark Robinson became the nominee for governor in North Carolina. That's going to bring a lot of the mainstream media into North Carolina and could influence some voting because Mark has been very outspoken on some issues that the left views as their trigger moments, you know, from women in sports, transgender, everything else. And he's been very brutal about that. But the one, Michelle, and I'll sort of leave it with this. I'll try to shorten this down. And I want Republicans to be honest with themselves. That's the one thing I've always tried. Republicans, be honest. California, you're not going to win. Okay, let's just be frank about this. You're not going to win the Senate seat out there. And so the hype upon Garvey coming in second simply assured that Adam Schiff is probably, barring a miracle, going to be the senator out there. But I heard a lot of Republicans say, he's in second. He was in first in some of the polls. Well, that's because Adam Schiff spent several million dollars to push him up, too, because he wanted to kick Katie Porter and Barbara Lee out, which has now happened, which probably for America, Katie Porter and Barbara Lee not being in Congress anymore from a conservative perspective is a good thing.
Yeah, but I don't know that having Adam Schiff is any better. You know?
No, well, you had to have one of the three, and none of them are good. So,
you know, he is a mystery and will always remain a mystery to me how anyone could vote for that man who has stood in front of the American public and lied endlessly. I don't get it, but I guess all politicians do it. And so it's a matter of where you stand on the issues.
I disagree, Michelle. I don't think all politicians do it.
No, you don't. You never did, dog.
Yeah, he lies. Yes. I mean, and let's just be frank. Adam Schiff is a chronic liar.
Yes.
In my opinion, I've watched him. I've worked with him. I've had to deal with him. I've had to deal with his phony sham impeachment from the first time. I've had to deal with him when he said there's conspiracy in plain sight. I've had to deal with him with phony Russian documents. I've had to deal with this man when he would rather lie than breathe, it appears. And so, unfortunately, people do begin to think, well, that's just politics. No, what he's doing is not politics. Spin is not lying. I can give you my perspective, and it be grounded in truth, and you may not like it. Adam Schiff will just, and Eric Swalwell and many others just seem to want to lie because it's part of who they are.
And that's, I thought California was better than that. And, you know, it's my home state and it's not better than that. And that's one of the many reasons I'll never go back. But all right, you have been inside and you have had to deal with so many political situations where maybe you have to mend fences. Maybe you have to reach across and deal with people you don't necessarily respect. What ultimately do you see happening? Nikki Haley Wednesday morning comes out and says, I'm suspending my campaign. She gave it a great run. She really does have an enormous following in America. It's not insignificant at all. This is not Marianne Williamson on the Republican side. It's far different from that. You know, Donald Trump made many jabs at her, as he has done at every opponent. We're coming to see that that's the way that he fights. Mm-hmm. What is it going to take for these two to make up?
Great question. I take a little bit different approach, Michelle. I think that you saw Nikki Haley's campaign approach a great deal. I'm even hesitant to say a great deal. I think she has a following. I mean, she's articulate. She does well. She gives a great speech. She has a great backstory in that. But she's also tied to a part of the Republican Party that really, frankly, doesn't exist at the grassroots anymore. And I think that's something that really cost her. I think the last 4 weeks have been detrimental to Nikki Haley's political future going forward. She became, after this race, in my little small opinion, was over after Iowa. It was definitely over after New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And then to spend the next month waiting on South Carolina, where you got beat badly, and then into Super Tuesday, again, getting beat badly. And then taking that time to basically become the frontline Democrat attack lines against Donald Trump. And here's what's going to happen. As someone who's done these political campaigns for 30 plus years, Nikki Haley will be seen more in September and October than she has been the last 2 months. Why? Because Democrat super PACs are going to use her face, her words, her rallies to attack Donald Trump, Senate candidates across the country, and governor's candidates across the country. So she went from being an opponent to being a little bit of a, I think personally, a pariah in the Republican circles. The part that Nikki, I don't, and many of those, I don't think really get at this point is that, let's just say, because she kept saying, she made this comment, 30 or 40%. And I appreciate that she's there, and I've never stopped anybody from running, but I will say it's about like our uncommitted discussion on Joe Biden. The 35 or 40% that voted for her in some of these primaries when it was just her and Donald Trump, 98% of those are going to vote for Donald Trump. Yeah. They're not. And
you the really real think it's change that high? Will be. You think it's that high?
98%? Oh, easily.
Really?
Well, if it's not, Donald Trump can't win. Okay. Let's just be brutally honest here. Just like Joe Biden, if that 20% doesn't show up or that 10% doesn't show up in Michigan, Biden has no path to victory.
Right.
So you're also now, and so let's give this, Michelle, take a step back. If we believe that the Democrats are willing to sit out and not vote, or maybe vote for a third party, such as a RFK Jr. or something like that, which again, I'll go back to an old analogy for me. I always like to go back to sports or movies. Movies don't take a dramatic turn in the middle without a reason, and sports teams don't all of a sudden become something in the middle of the year that they're typically not, barring something just amazingly happen. A running team doesn't become a passing team. Passing team doesn't become a running team. It just doesn't happen unless you have massive injuries and you bring in great players. It's just a different issue. People who vote in these primaries will vote in the primaries and will vote in the general, and they'll vote for the R or the D on the ticket. Now, if you get Haley's group, which, I mean, again, look at most of the elections across the country in the last few years, whether you like Donald Trump or not, is sort of, let's do this analytically. She's representing a smaller and smaller base. We've seen it in state elections. We've seen it in governor's elections and Senate races. So that 10 to 15% that do not like Donald Trump would not vote for Donald Trump or say they want, they'll either stay out or they'll vote for Donald Trump. They're not going to probably vote for Joe Biden. If they do, that's a 1% on both sides. It's a 1% from Democrats, 1% from, but these are the kind of percentages we're going to play in. So look, I think there's probably a contingent out there that would have loved to have seen somebody else. Me personally, I think Donald Trump had this from the beginning, and the Democrats helped it get even more so by the crazy stuff that they brought against him. The new Republican Party after Donald Trump, you know, will not be till 2028. And I think that's where we have to look if you want to see. So that's why I think you saw some of the others get out earlier. Yeah. That's why you didn't see, frankly, some of the big names in the Republican Party get in this race to start with.
Like who?
Just name them. Ted Cruz. You didn't see Ted Cruz get in. You didn't see, the possibilities of some state governors who had possibilities in years past. If you didn't have the Donald Trump on the ticket, the ticket would have had 25 people on it. It would look more like 2016 or 2012 than it would this. They read the tea leaves early and said, nope. And they wasn't willing to do what Nikki Haley was willing to do. And even Ron DeSantis to a point. Nikki Haley was, and it became so obvious, she was betting that something would take Donald Trump off the ballot. And that if I just stay long enough, then people have to come to me because I'm the only one left. I made this comment on my podcast, also on interviews. I said, even if Donald Trump was out next week and everybody else, there would be everybody re-engaged their campaign, and there would be people who haven't even ran for president would be at the convention looking for delegates.
Well, that's going to be interesting because a lot of legal experts believe that in spite of the 9-0 decision at the Supreme Court regarding the Colorado thing, His immunity case may be far different, and they may decide that he's not immune from trial, because of actions when he was in the office. What do you foresee as maybe the one thing that could knock Donald Trump off the ballot, if anything?
Nothing. He's on the ballot in November. Look, I mean, last time, if you really thought that this would be effective, and I know this sounds high, but just bear with me a second.
Yeah.
There was a couple of states in Super Tuesday this past week that said, if Donald Trump was convicted, would that change your vote? And you only had about 25 or 35% that said yes. Okay, I'm going to take it a step further. If he's actually on the ballot, it won't change their vote. They're not going to vote for Joe Biden. That means that they just stay at home, and that's just really not an alternative. As an attorney, the case before, I would encourage everybody, go read the brief and the opinions that have been filed on especially this immunity case, especially read the brief filed by Trump's team concerning immunity at the DC courts before it got ruled and then went to the Supreme Court. It's worth the read. But then also read the DC appellate court's opinion and how they upheld it. It was another convoluted, stretched argument. Now, all of us would probably agree that immunity wouldn't apply to something had nothing to do with the job and was of criminal nature. Mm-hmm. However, you're stretching the argument. I think this is where Jack Smith, who is known for his novel legal arguments, by the way, in which he convicted a former governor in Virginia of bribery, and the Supreme Court unanimously said, you got it wrong. Jack Smith is not known for solid legal arguments a lot of times. He's out there on the fringe. And so you get this idea of tell us what the illegal activity was here. Where was the non-official acts that he's depending on? And the Supreme Court's got to look at that. They're not going to announce this. I would be shocked, Michelle, if this is not announced before, if it's announced before the last week in June. So think about this. Last week in June, let's just say it does in part. I think what's going to happen, it's going to be reversed in part, upheld in part, and sent back to the appellate court for further hearings, which will then take it further into the summer. I'm not sure Jack Smith gets a trial before November.
Interesting. Interesting.
Could be wrong. It's crapshoot.
No, you're never wrong, Doug.
Oh, yeah, right. yeah, if that's right, that would be a problem.
One of the knocks on Joe Biden is his unwillingness to speak to the public. Like, he does it from ice cream shops. He does it, he didn't do the Super Bowl. This State of the Union here in 2024, I'm a political junkie. And I have no interest in watching because I feel as though I'm going to be condescended to is not really the right term. I feel like he's just going to get up there and misrepresent everything beyond just spin. He's going to try to tell us that the border is the Republicans' fault, that it's, been a bad border for 40 years. And, even though I mean, it's like the numbers don't lie, but they'll lie about the numbers. And they'll blame every problem in America on Republicans and somehow on Trump. And I'm just not sure. Everyone's saying this is going to be a massive audience. What do you expect the public to do when this State of the Union happens Thursday night? Do you think that they're going to take interest, or will they find, a rerun of Friends?
Most will not watch it. I mean, look, we think about this for massive sporting events today, we get 35, 40 million people watching.
Yep.
Okay. And that's really a high number. Okay. The Super Bowl this year was pretty good. They're probably, I'm going to be honest here. You're going to get probably, I won't be generous and say he gets 10 million, 12 million among the networks and everywhere else. That's a minor fraction of the people who vote. Okay. Yep. Let's just be honest about this. I'm a believer for both Republicans and Democrats. The State of the Union needs to go back to the way it used to be. And that is, hey, send us a letter and tell us how the State of the Union is going. That's the way the presidents did it up until the start of the 20th century. They didn't go up and have this production. And it was one of my favorites, and maybe yours as well, one of my favorite presidents, Ronald Reagan, who actually began to make the State of the Union into this event that it is now. He used his charm. He used his ability to speak to make it the TV kind of moment. And here sitting in the audience is the, you know, by the way, I used to use this all the time. The very first person to ever use a guest at the State of the Union was Ronald Reagan. And his guest was one of the officers who dove into the Potomac to save people in the fire of the Air Florida jet that went down just a few weeks earlier. And since then, every president's had a guest or numerous guests.
Right.
And it really, at the end of the day, Republicans and Democrats, and I'll just say this out for everyone, there's very few memorable lines that last more than 48 hours, and they become campaign speeches or they become very much open-ended kind of things. For those that we like, we say, wow, that was a strong speech. For those we don't like, God, that was terrible, and they misused. I love the quote that you said, you know, we're all entitled, you know, you say something about the numbers, but, you know, you're going to lie about the numbers. Well, that's going to happen. But I almost have a funny here for you on your podcast. I love being with you. So here's my funny. People who watch the State of the Union tonight are going to do it for the same reason people watch NASCAR from my part of the world. They're waiting for the wreck. Okay, they're waiting for turn three, and Joe leaves it in too much in the curve, and we watch it spin out of control with the and the stuttering. And please hear me, I struggle with this because all of us who speak in public, we have those moments when we can't get stuff out.
Yes, we do.
And I'm going to give, and this may sound, and somebody may try to use this against me at some point, but I do hesitate to make fun of Joe Biden speaking because he does have a speech impediment. He does have a legitimate stutter. Right. My making fun of Joe Biden is when he just don't know where he's at and he doesn't know what he's saying. It's not the way he says it. It's just what he says.
Right.
And I mean, he is a, so I think I said this, I'll just name this for you tonight. The State of the Union is the NASCAR State of the Union. We're just waiting for the wrecks.
You know, I and the analysis will be entertaining as well. The analysis of Super Tuesday, it boggles the mind when Jen Psaki and Rachel Maddow on MSNBC cackle at Virginians who are concerned about the border, who are concerned about illegal immigration. And they say, the border, we live in Virginia, the border. Yeah, we got a border with West Virginia, put up a wall. I don't know how people are so out of touch. How is this happening?
That is going to become a pivotal moment. Mark that, keep it in your file, tag the, you know, save it in your Twitter, whatever. That's going to become, you're going to see that in ads in the fall. And you're going to see it in ads in places like Georgia, Virginia. You're going to see it in Texas. You're going to see it in Michigan. You're going to see it in New Hampshire. The tone deafness of the left and the absolute brutal arrogance of what they're saying right now. And Jen Psaki, Rachel Maddow, Joy Reid, you know, in my opinion and the opinion of mother, I do not understand how MSNBC allows a racist to be on TV all the time. And that's just plain out racist. She her statements, her attitude, it's my opinion, and they're entitled to be different. But I mean, when you hear her talk and you see it, it's just brutally comes out and comes across as racist. But when you're doing that right there and you're laughing about it, when I, 40 miles from my house, have a young woman beaten to death by an illegal immigrant, why in the state of Virginia, you had a 14-year-old raped by illegal immigrants, while you have all across this country, literally dozens and hundreds of people being killed by drunk drivers and others who are not legally supposed to be in this country or legally driving. That is a message is not playing. The Democrats are so tone deaf on immigration right now that I hope they stay tone deaf, because this will be if Donald Trump can capitalize on it, this is what gives him the victory. Because that is going to be, it's going to be the safety, the soccer mom issue, the safety mom issue, the safety dad issue, whatever cute term they want to come up with. That's going to be it. Because when fentanyl is running rampant and when you got faces now that they can place on immigration, such as New York City, the moped bandits, you and I go to New York right regular. And I don't go between, I rarely go outside the little area that I'm in because I just don't want to get with it.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think, too, for me, I can't remember being more outraged than I was when I saw those thugs in New York City beat up the cops and then walk out of jail flipping off the cameras. I was outraged. Now, I was beyond outraged when Lakin Hope Riley was murdered down in Georgia. But the for me, even prior to that, those yep. flipping off the camera coming out of a New York City jail was so insulting, not only because of them, but because of who let them out. Mm-hmm. And it and the way that things are so lawless in New York is so one of the great American cities, one of the great global cities, is turning to rubble. It's really, really sad. Last thing before I let you go, the other tone deaf message. Well, there are a couple. Biden using the cookie monster for shrinkflation. When shrinkflation is the same thing as inflation, they are the same exact thing. It is not illegal for a company when there's inflation to either charge more for the same amount or to charge the same for a less amount of right. whatever Fritos, chips, cookies. And then for the Cookie Monster X account, Twitter account, to echo those words. I mean, this is public television, right? I don't know that the Cookie Monster should be agreeing or disagreeing with the President of the United States.
Yeah, it's a bad look, but I would say they're about on the same, the level that the president is having to communicate at now seems to be very similar in that level, to very elementary kind of level that they're putting stuff, and which is why people are looking at Joe Biden and believe that, you know, here's somebody who's just a barely old, just a little bit older than Donald Trump, when everybody universally, Democrats, Republicans believe that Donald Trump's fit for service and they don't believe Joe Biden's fit for service. Remember, though, this is one of the reasons people have had trouble with PBS for a humpteen years now. And I'm a conservative who actually listens sometimes to PBS. I like some of the documentaries. I hear stuff that I don't ever hear on American television or radio. But remember that the Sesame Street Group is a private organization making millions of dollars off their free access, basically, right. or subsidized access to PBS. It worst is it's a violation to me of that neutrality that should be there. But it also goes to the fact of why you have so many people in Congress and everywhere else saying just defund PBS, let them work off their viewers if they want to, but don't have public funds, because you're using the appearance of the public television character to break a political message. And, they've always sort of dabbled in that, but they've gotten really bad about it lately.
As has NPR. I would say they've been very biased for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, Supreme Court 9-0 ruling against Colorado to kick Trump off the ballot. And I'm not even going to mention Keith Olbermann's response, because I don't think he's mentally together. But you had pundits on CNN, on MSNBC, on a variety of places saying this was a miscarriage of justice. This was legal malpractice, shoddy judicial work by a 9-0 Supreme Court decision. And these humans are getting on television saying, I know better. What the hell is that?
Yeah, well, it's liberal elitism at its best. Now, I'll tell you just I don't think this is going to happen. I've already shared what I think could possibly happen in the case before the Supreme Court on immunity. But let's just say that they go an opposite way and completely agree with the left and say there's absolutely no presidential immunity. By the way, which if Donald Trump does win in his Justice Department, then my question is, are they going to see the federal grand jury to indict President Obama for killing Americans with drones? Okay. Straight up. I mean, that's against the law, period. So are you going to do that? Again, they don't like to go down that, but if they said that, then the left would say the Supreme Court stood in the gap for democracy and they'd be the greatest in the world. Look, the unfortunate part is this is where, as an attorney, but also as a politician, I get frustrated with the Supreme Court on both sides. Is I like a court that would tell me their interpretation of the law, not their politics, not anything else. I may disagree greatly with their decision. That's my right as a citizen. But stick to it. And I think the interesting thing about this court is in this decision, they followed through on a doctrine. And Michelle, I'd love to come back and talk to you about this one even further. And I'll break it down into simple parts because it is a difficult thing. They basically said, after all of the dicta in that case, Congress would have to deal with this. Congress is not going to deal with it except in a political fashion. There's also another case that's in the court system in the Supreme Court right now called the Chevron Doctrine, in which it says that Chevron Doctrine gives deference to the executive branch's agencies to interpret what the Congress passed. Many of us in Congress have years said that they're over abusing that privilege. There's a good possibility the Supreme Court is going to strike that down. But if they do, it means Congress is going to have to work, because they're going to have to put bills into play that actually define what they want done. So, in some ways, this court is pretty straight down the line. But the left is just unhinged. And Keith Olbermann, I've never met the man. I don't really desire to meet the man. I used to think he was funny in the 90s with Dan Patrick. But yes, I don't know exactly what happened to that individual. That individual doesn't exist anymore.
No, he does not. And to suggest that the Supreme Court should be dissolved is as big of a meltdown as one can have. And he's had many. Doug Collins, it's always great to have you on. Thank you so much. And we'll do it again.
I look forward to it.
In the meantime, everyone, I always say it, be brave, do good, just a little bit of good today, and we will see you next time.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.